So we like to kick these off nowadays with a story about cars. But I think none of our stories have been as good as the one that Sim is about to tell us about the
The
Jag.
Jag. So, probably 3 months ago, I had a check engine light pop up on the Jag. Checked it out in my reader, and it suggested it was the crank position sensor. A quick Google, as you do, led me to the XE forums, which said, yeah, early engines, effectively the sensor and the part it senses, it was a push fit on the crankshaft. And after about 80,000 miles, that works its way loose and it causes the sensor to say that the position was wrong. Jag's done 83,000 miles, I think it is. So, okay, it's that. I'll be honest, I don't use the Jag a lot. I use it to drive the girls to school in the morning. So it's a 8 mile round trip, and then that's it. I use the Toyota pretty much the rest of the time. So, yeah, not too bothered. Just left it on the driveway doing that every single day. MOT was due, and obviously, a check engine light. Illuminated is an MOT failure. So I thought, oh, book it into Jag, see what it's like. Now, part of the problem with Jag is obviously you can't buy a Jag anymore. I'm sure you're all aware of that. But it also means they've closed down pretty much all their showrooms as well. So I originally bought the Jag from the local one to me in Tamworth. That closed down after about 2 years. I still had the lease on it, and so because I bought it from them, they closed it down. They gave me a free courtesy car every time I took it into them, because the nearest one was then in Coventry. That one also recently closed down, so now my nearest one is actually in Shirley, South Birmingham. So it's quite a way away from me, as you're well known, Matt, there. Luckily, the mother-in-law literally lives 500 meters up the road from the Jag dealership in there. So I thought, oh, drop it off with her. I'll drop it off to them. I'll walk up to her house. I can work from her house for the day, pick it up in the evening. So drop it off. I dropped it off for its service because it was due and just to have the check engine light. I walk in there and the guy goes, oh, MOT's due in 29 days. So we can actually do the MOT now and you can get a 13-month MOT. I was like, yeah, okay. He goes, and the good thing about that is, as part of the MOT, if you've got a check engine light on, we actually try and find out what the problem is. So you can pay 65 quid for the MOT at Jag, or I could pay their service charges of £200 an hour for an investigation. Yeah. Let's go with the MOT, lads. Yeah, that sounds grand.
I wonder, Jag, you're going out of business with numbers like that. I'm no
It's
accountant,
actually a
but
Land Rover
that
dealership
math
as well,
doesn't
because
math.
there is no actual Jag dealership anywhere near me. So I do that. Don't hear anything from them. It's getting to the point where I've got to get home to pick the kids up. Obviously, the wife's with me as well. So, like, yeah, okay. We'll just get going, go pick the kids. So on the way back, I get the video they do. So a lot of dealerships these days take a video of your car for you. Walk around, show you all the issues. And obviously, I'm checking as well online to see the MOT. I'd already seen that the MOT had failed. So they ring me up. So they send me the video, and he's like, oh, yeah, there's a your two rear tires need replacing. One's got a bulge in. There were 19-inch rims with a 35mm sidewall. So literally every pothole I ever hit causes a bulge. So not that news. The driver's rear tire had a cut in it down to the canvas. It had a bulge and it also had a hole causing the slow leak. Okay. This part's important for later on in the story. Aside from that though, the rear wheels were very difficult to turn, which they trace back to a failing differential. So straight away I'm thinking, this ain't good. This is going to be expensive. He then says the engine light is on because you've got a stretched time in train. It's got too hot. The oil's low in the car, but we can't find the reason for that yet. It's like, great. They ring me up and say, we need some time to go through it. Is it okay if we keep it till tomorrow? Give you a ring in the morning? I was like, yeah, that's fine, lad. Absolutely fine. So they ring. So I drop the girls off at school next day. They ring me up. Okay, Mr. Steele, we've been through your car. We think we found the cause of it. I'd just like to give you a quick rundown. Your turbo seal has a leak in it, which has caused it to start consuming your oil. Okay, yeah. That's caused your timing chain to get hot and therefore stretch, which has also damaged your crankshaft. It has damaged your valves. It has damaged your crank seals. And I'm already thinking, this isn't good. This is very, very, very not good. He says, so we'd need to replace your turbo, your crankshaft, your valves, your timing chain, obviously. We might need to replace your head as well. And then he goes, I'm up to $9,500 in parts before I even include the labour at £200 an hour. The MOT has also highlighted that your differential has failed. That's usually about £3,000. Obviously, you need two new tyres at the rear. They run £250 each. He says, so currently we're up to about $11,500 without labour. Car itself's about worth $7,500. So I'm like, you know what, mate? Sod it. Not interested. I'll come pick it up. He's like, yeah, no worries. I'd do the same, to be honest with you.
Was there not discs and pads involved in this as well?
Yeah, discs and pads were worn. They weren't fails, but they were worn. Okay. So they would likely need replacing. Discs and pads, they were going to charge £1,400 for discs and pads all round.
You know what? Any other day, that's a terrible deal. But given that you're at $11,000, you're just like, yeah, just chuck on top, who cares?
Exactly.
10%, what is it?
Yeah, whatever.
So obviously I'm like, essentially the Jag's my company car. I get an allowance through work for the company car. They pay me a certain amount each month, which cover the payments on the Jag. There's literally no point in me sinking 10, 11, 12 grand in this car. I may as well just get rid of it, go get another car. I've lost no money personally on it that way.
I'd like to point out as well, was the original warning light was not really related to the problems that were found then. So the car's got this quite advanced app that tells you a lot of information, and at no point did it go, your engine is eating itself alive. It just gave you a warning light based on a crank position.
Well, interesting you say that. They say it was all caused by a low oil, but the oil indicator was never on because the pressure didn't drop low enough. And yeah, like you say, the Jag has an app which monitors it, and that actually said there was no issues. Specifically under engine, it says no issues.
So, did you notice any of this while driving it? Or did you not drive it long enough to kind of pick up on it?
I heard a rattle. However, going back a few years, the Jag was currently on its fourth set of engine mounts. And the rattle I was hearing was very similar to when the engine mounts had failed the previous three times. So I just thought nothing of it.
Yeah, just engine mounts, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the engine mounts. Yeah, the engine mounts were causing the exhaust to twist, which was causing that to rattle against the car. So I just put it down to that, basically.
And so there's nothing to say that that rattle isn't the engine mount. That might be that, and they just hadn't got to that point when they got to the 12 grand that you owed.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. I think I'm not doing that, so I immediately book into We Buy Any Car, tell them everything. They offer me £1,400 for it. I declare an engine light warning and a rattly engine. I also declare, I consider the bodywork sort of a 3 out of 8, which is slightly better than you'd expect for the age of the car. So I'll pick it up the next day, take it down, straight down to We Buy Any Car. Jack have cleared the engine warning light. And obviously the technician or the sales guy at We Buy Any Car, so he changes that. He marks the bodywork a slightly worse condition than I did, which is fair because I'd forgotten the missus had crashed it into a parking pole, so it had a dented bumper. So basically, their quote on the day came out £50 less than what they quoted me online. And so the guy just went, "Nah, you know what? I'll just give you what we quoted you online." I thought, yep. Fair enough, mate. I'd gone in there expecting to come out like £500-600. So to get £1,400 for it, I was well happy.
That's probably the best deal anyone's ever got from them.
Yeah, it must be. My dad sold his car to them and got exactly what they quoted him as well. So it's one of these things, isn't it? If you're honest about the condition of the car, the guy before me was arguing about it because they wanted to knock £800 off. But it actually had a rust hole in the rear wheel arch, which he said, you know, he hadn't said anything about on his online quote. And the We Buy Any Car's like, if you see a car on Auto Trader for £2,000, you turned up and it had a rusty hole in it, you wouldn't want to be paying £2,000. So, yeah. Anyway, the thing about the Jag is, as I mentioned, it's got an app. The thing about the app is you buy it in yearly increments and it stays for that year. And it's activated by connecting your phone to the Bluetooth in the car. It appears it doesn't disconnect itself when you wipe the car from the Bluetooth. So I still have the tracker on the Jag, which shows me its full GPS history as well. So obviously, I'm interested here. What's going to happen to this? So within 24 hours, it had made its way to British car auctions in Walsall. It sat there. They were clearly moving it about, looking at it, because every now and then I'd get a notification on my phone letting me know that I'd left the bonnet open or that I hadn't locked it. And then it basically disappeared off the app and then showed up 2 days later in Manchester. I was like, oh, somebody's bought it. Have a quick look. It's at a garage in Manchester. A couple of days later, I notice it driving. I get told the bonnet's open and the tracking's, the doors aren't locked. So have a look, and it's an MOT centre. I thought, this is going to be interesting. about an hour later, I think it was you, Dave, who noticed it had passed its MOT.
It had, yes. With asterisks.
With asterisks, because the only thing that was noted was an advisory for a worn rear tyre. Now, if I take you back to when it failed for me, that tyre, and I had video proof of this, was down to the canvas and had a giant, well, I wouldn't say a giant, but it clearly had a nail through the tyre as well. So that tells me that's probably not an entirely legit MOT, personally. So yeah. And then Scott found it on sale for Auto Trader for $7,500.
We did have a good discussion on if that garage had a warranty, you could get a Jag out of that for a while. The amount of things that they would be fixing for you would be astronomical. Say you get a Jag out for a while, you wouldn't. You'd get a Jag for a little while, and then it'd be back in their dealership getting fixed for 6 months.
I don't think they'd even fix it. I think they'd just give you your money back.
That's exactly what would happen.
Or you just get the garage's courtesy Vauxhall Mariva for 6 months or something like that.
Yeah. Buy a Jag, you've now got a Mariva.
So since then the car's clearly been sold. It's now shown at a private address in the northwest. I won't give it away. But 2 days after it arrived at this private address, it then tracked to a Halfords Auto Center where it has been since. So it's now been there for 4 days. So take from that what you will. The tracking for the Jag unfortunately runs out next week, so yeah. At that point, I've lost all focus on it.
When you said it was going to Halfords, I really hoped he was just buying floor mats or something. I hoped it was fine, but 4 days there. Oh, it's going back to the garage. It's a shame that you're going to lose the tracking because it is going straight. Oh, we should check the garage. Can we remember the garage name? Because we should go back on their Auto Trader because it's going to be for sale again in 2 weeks.
It is a shame, like the sort of data protection creepiness or whatever, because it would almost be like good of you to find this address in the northwest and actually warn the people, this is the story of the car. Like, go and get your money back while you can.
Now, I could be wrong. They could have fixed everything with it. It's entirely possible. But that right rear MOT failure to advisory just tells me they probably haven't.
Yeah, they fix a turbo. They fix a diff. They've effectively replaced the engine, but they've left a worn tyre on.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Taking a tyre off of an old Jaguar that's sitting beside it, man, that'll fit, it'll be fine.
Second-hand, I mean, to be fair, tire. It's on its second set of wheels, so there you go, because the first one's cracked.
Given it's on its like fourth set of engine mounts or whatever, you've basically built a new car out of it anyway.
Triggers Jag, here.
Yeah, it's Triggers Jag. Triggers Jag. Unfortunately, they did take the Racing Line and Vocas stickers off the rear windows before they sold it. They did left the Le Mans track map on there. So.
I really like the photos of the Le Mans track map because they kind of deliberately included it but didn't fully crop it in or out. It was kind of just there. It's like, if you're going to be including it, include it properly. Don't do this kind of weird cut. But we're talking a garage that just flogged a complete destroyed Jag. Their attention to detail is not through the roof, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Sim, what's happening now with CarWise?
So I've made an inquiry to a car in the Stellantis group. So, yeah, I quite like it. It is fully electric. I will say that. I do need to sort out a potential charger for home if I go that route. British Gas have quoted me £1,800 today. Luckily, the car in question has zero deposit, so it should offset that nicely. I'm not going to tell you the name of the car now. I will say, part of the Stellantis group, I'd never even heard of this brand, let alone the model. So,
really?
Oh, okay. Now I'm really intrigued. That's not what I thought.
I'm just looking at their brands. All right. Okay. So it's funny. The Stellantis website, right? It's got a brand section and it starts with our brands and then it's alphabetical, but then they've just added more to the bottom. So Abarth, Alfa Romeo, Chrysler, Citroen, Dodge, DS Automobiles, still alphabetical, Fiat, Jeep, Lancia, Maserati, Opel, Peugeot, Ram trucks, Vauxhall. It's like we're getting to the end of the alphabet, but there's still two more to go. Free to Move and Lesis, who I think make my router. So,
and interestingly, not one of those is the brand I'm looking at.
What? So are you okay? Are you buying from a Stellantis brand, but Stellantis don't know it's their brand?
It would appear that way.
I'm looking. Is there a chance that this will be completed by next week?
No.
No,
not at the minute, because I want to MOT the Toyota and get that sorted before I commit to any further financial ruin from a car, quite frankly.
I'm now on Wikipedia trying to work out what brands they have, but Wikipedia actually lists less than what their website does.
You got any nerves about the Toyota?
Toyota I'm a bit happier with. I do less than 3,000 miles a year in it. It gets serviced in June and MOT'd in November/December. I think the ball joints are going on it, but I don't think they'll have gone enough to fail the MOT at this point. Probably get it through this MOT, and then that'll be a job for me and you on the driveway at some point, Matt.
Excellent. We know all the best repairs happen that way.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, here's a nice segue to motorsport. I'm on the Stellantis Wikipedia, and it says Chairman John Elkin. He's made the news this week because he's got opinions that nobody in the world agrees with. Where he's decided.
Can I stop you there, Dave, before we go any further?
Uh-huh.
Because I have a quiz.
Uh-oh.
And it's Formula One, 2007, to the 14th of November, 2025.
Oh, God.
Okay? this is John Elkin's reign as chairman of Ferrari, isn't it?
Also known as the Lewis Hamilton era. Mm-hmm. So, since the 1st of January 2007, Dave, who has won more World Drivers' Championships in this time, Lewis Hamilton or Ferrari? Correct. Lewis has won 7 to Ferrari's 1. Matthew, who has won more World Constructors' Championships in this period? Is it Lewis Hamilton or Ferrari?
What?
Who's been part of more World Constructors' Championship titles in that time?
Lewis
with 8 to Ferrari's 2. And one of those two was because McLaren got disqualified, let's not forget.
I was going to say the one championship, Drivers' Championship, they did get as well was because McLaren kind of imploded anyway and it was Lewis's rookie season. So there's a little asterisk on that one.
Very much so. So, Dave, over to you. Since 2007, who has had more Grand Prix wins? Is it Lewis Hamilton or Ferrari?
It's Lewis Hamilton.
It is, who has had 105 to Ferrari's 56.
That's what it's done.
He's got double the wins. I'm partly surprised on that, but also partly not. Like, it was a pretty dominant era, but, man, double the entire Ferrari team.
So moving on, Matt, to pole positions. Who has more, Lewis Hamilton or Ferrari?
Ooh, I'm going to go with Lewis.
It is 104 poles for Lewis, 68 for Ferrari.
You know, this includes the Ferrari Alonso years where they were battling for the title and Mercedes weren't there yet.
Yep. And the Vettel years, sort of 18, 19.
Yeah.
And let's not forget, Leclerc is pretty quick. He's had quite a lot of poles himself. He's had 20-odd poles, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's a record of, like, most poles without a win or something.
Yeah, exactly. So next one, who is it? Dave, fastest laps, who has more, Lewis or Ferrari?
I'm going with Lewis.
You're actually wrong on that one. Ferrari has 69 fastest laps, whereas unfortunately Lewis only has 68. Matt, let's move on to podium finishes. And bear in mind here that Ferrari have two bites of the cherry at every Grand Prix for this one, okay? Who has more, Lewis or Ferrari?
I mean, it's got to be Ferrari, surely.
You are correct. They have had 255 podiums to Lewis's 202.
That actually surprises me.
Next one, Dave, points scored. So again, let's remember Ferrari have two cars per Grand Prix. So under the old point system in 2007, they could have scored, was it 18, I think it was, for a 1-2. And obviously in the modern era, 43 points. Whereas Lewis can only ever score 25, 26 with a fastest lap. So who has more points since 2007? Lewis or Ferrari?
It's got to be Ferrari.
It is 7,038.5. Whereas Lewis, unfortunately, only has 5,010.5.
Stupid.
Lewis only known as 75% of Ferrari's points.
Oh, man.
Next up, Matt. Laps led since 2007, and again, Ferrari have two drivers who could score towards this statistic.
Yeah, but one of them was Felipe Massa, so...
World champion. Are you in on my answer?
Who has more? Yeah, Lewis or Ferrari, who has more laps led?
No, that's got to be Lewis.
You are correct. Lewis has 5,488 laps led to Ferrari's 4,076. So, final question goes to you, Dave. Who is responsible for Ferrari's current poor performance? Could it possibly be Lewis Hamilton or Ferrari?
I think this is an evergreen question because this one goes right back to basically the 1960s, and the only blip in that is the Schumacher years. The people responsible for the poor Ferrari performance is Ferrari.
You clearly won't make a CEO of the Stellantis group there, Dave, or Ferrari or whoever what he is now.
I think, do you know what? I looked him up and it turns out that John Elkann is a nepo baby. His parents were involved in all of the surroundings of Ferrari and whatnot and all the rest of it. I can't remember the exact details, but he got there because his parents were there, not because he is successful. And I would say that would explain the lack of performance at Ferrari. However, the lack of performance at Ferrari has actually been a constant since around the 1960s. The only time that Ferrari have been a consistent front runner is when the Italians were not running it and we had Jean Todt, Ross Brawn and Michael Schumacher running it. Obviously, you look at him on his MO was there as well, but he was less of a part of it than he was at other times. So I would say Ferrari are responsible for Ferrari's performance as ever.
I really don't understand John Elkann's comments whatsoever. I don't understand what he was hoping to get out of saying. What was it? Essentially, the drivers need to shut up and drive. The mechanics are doing really well because they're winning the pit stop challenge this year. The car's clearly atrocious. As I saw one person on Twitter put it, they've got a car where the drivers can't even accelerate all the way to the braking zone. They have to. How often do you hear lap five, lap six? Okay, Lewis, we need to Lyco from this point on, please.
Yeah, Ferrari do seem to. Presumably, it's frankly using too much energy problem to not get enough performance if you're having to recover a lot more than the teams. But the car's never been any good the whole year. The only time it looked any good was in the sprints because you could run a lower ride height because it wasn't going to get disqualified for scraping the ground because it turns out it doesn't work when it's low. It doesn't work when it's high off the ground. So you run it low to the ground and then it scrapes the plank and then it gets done for being too low. So the car's junk, to be quite frank. And from some of the onboard laps, you could tell. Like, it's difficult car to drive for both drivers. Like, Lewis is struggling with it a little bit more than Charles is, but Charles has not had an easy year either. And that's before you even start talking about the fact that the drivers have to manage the engineers constantly throughout the race, which is something that, of all of Ferrari's recent drivers, Carlos Sainz was probably the best at. Lewis, for all his positives, doesn't seem to be great at having to manage the pit wall. He likes the pit wall to manage itself, which he's been very good at in previous years with Bono. So it doesn't suit Lewis, but it doesn't really matter if it suits Lewis because the car's crap and the team's crap. And it's been like that for 60 years now, minus the Schumacher years. So chuck in one other championship in there for Kimi Räikkönen, but only because McLaren imploded.
This thing about, the car's crap because they can't run it as low as they want, because if they do, they'll get disqualified. That's gone on since, they were disqualified, was it the second or third round? It was quite early in the season, wasn't it?
Something like that,
yeah. It's China, so I think that was round two, wasn't it?
Yeah.
China that was won the sprint?
Yeah.
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 And then they both got disqualified from the race.
Yeah.
So that was 19 races ago, effectively, for a lot of years, the whole season. And I understand there's obviously a lot of people developing towards next year and new cars, new regs, etc. But you can't hold an excuse for a shit car for 19 races and still expect the drivers to be happy with it.
Ferrari have been doing it for 19 years.
Yeah.
This is just another year. This is business. The unfortunate thing is, this is business as usual for Ferrari. Yeah. We all like to sit and think that Ferrari are a front runner, but the reality of Ferrari is they're an upper midfield team and have been since the 1960s, minus the occasional championship for people like Lauda and things like that. It's been a disaster otherwise. It kind of has been, but that's Ferrari. We all want them to do better, but they never do. I think John's just drinking the Kool-Aid, isn't he?
I mean, it's interesting that he said those comments whilst in the garage at Bahrain, where Ferrari just secured the WEC championship, a 1-2-3 in the drivers' championship.
Was that in
the manufacturers' championship?
The 8 hours of BOP, then.
Yeah, exactly that. It's the championship where BOP has helped them. Whichever way you look at it, they have benefited from BOP this year in that series. So, and let's not forget, who runs the Ferrari hypercar team? It's not Ferrari.
Oh, it's the CF Corso, yeah.
But even then, is it Le Mans? They actually had a pretty terrible race. It was that the Le Mans was the big highlight of the BOP issue, that Porsche ran the perfect race. Ferrari, I think all three cars had issues and mistakes and all sorts throughout, but they still won.
Let's not forget, Kubica was managing the pit wall from the car as well.
Yeah, and it was the, quote, privateer team that won as well. So they say there's a difference, but there's not. But let's take their statement as fact for the sake of discussion. They say there's a factory team. They got beaten by privateers then. That's not a great look. Somebody else bought your car and beat you with it. How's that look? But this is Ferrari through and through. It's we all remember growing up in the 90s and watching F1. I remember Jean Alesi winning the Canadian Grand Prix. And that was amazing because it's Jean Alesi winning the Canadian Grand Prix in a Ferrari with Gilles Villeneuve's number on it at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. It was it's so cool. But part of the reason that it's so awesome is Ferrari don't win races that often. It's the reality. Never mind championships. They don't win races that often. The Schumacher years are kind of some of our formative years. I know we all started watching F1 before Schumacher, but we kind of grew up through those years. So in our heads, Ferrari are that. They should be that good, but they've never been that good. And even when their cycles changes of what team is at the front, like we had McLaren at the front, and we had Renault at the front, and Mercedes and Red Bull. Notice how the cycle just continues around Ferrari. They're kind of sitting there whilst everything cycles through. And Mercedes bought Braun, and they went backwards a little bit just because of the weird nature of that. And then when it was Mercedes' quote, turn to cycle to the front, they just jumped Ferrari, and Ferrari stayed where they are. And then when that era was done, it was like, oh, we're going to have Red Bull in now. Oh, Red Bull are going to cycle to the front. I was like, well, Ferrari are going to stay where they are, but Red Bull and Mercedes are going to rotate around them. It's just a constant. They're an upper midfield team. It's just that they've got the aura of Ferrari is what it really is.
Yeah, there's very strong rumours that the technical and management team, not necessarily Fred Vasseur, but sort of the department heads, are very dismissive of the suggestions that Lewis has been making on where they should make gains.
Well,
to the point where even Charles has come out and said, Lewis has been saying things which I've been saying for years about what's wrong with his car.
Well, Sackbolt and the drivers are clearly both wrong.
Exactly, yeah. But they did that with Alonso. I think when Alonso left, he said this team will never win until they start listening to other people. It's But it seems a bit like Williams got to that as well, didn't they? I think it's this is the way that a Formula One team has run is run. This is the way we will run our Formula One team, and we will be successful. But the rest of the grid has passed that by and updated their processes and management. And look where it left Williams. They're just showing signs of recovery now. And yeah, Ferrari are just too stubborn to do anything else. And yeah, I don't see that changing anytime soon, unfortunately.
But even if you go back all the way to the 90s, we've seen this before. They sacked Alain Prost for this, for taking a comment out of context that criticised the team after a pretty terrible year anyway. They sacked him because, how dare you say anything bad about Ferrari? His comment about the car drives like a truck was because the power steering had failed or something like that. It wasn't even a comment about the car being bad. It was about a failure. But he was sacked for it because how dare you say anything bad? And we're there again. Oh, let's hire the greatest, potentially greatest driver of all time, certainly the most successful driver of all time, and then dismiss everything he says. Why? Because some engineer who keeps going, "We are checking," doesn't believe him? Is that what we're doing? It's like they constantly make bad decisions that everybody watching live goes, "Well, that's definitely the wrong call," and then don't fix it. It's like it's a constant, and it's been like this for forever. And as much as I like Lewis, he's not going to succeed at Ferrari because nobody can change their ways. This isn't a problem with just Lewis as race engineer or whoever's running the technical team. This is a culture problem from the top down that you're not going to get rid of even in 5-10 years because it's already been there 60, 70. It's probably been there a lot longer than that. It's just my knowledge of Formula One or Grand Prix racing doesn't go back enough to talk about Ferrari in those days. And it certainly wasn't as big and professional a grid back in like the 1950s anyway. So it's not going to change.
Right. I mean, the 50s, if you think about it, 50s was Ferrari. If you talk about 60s to me, I think Lotus. 70s, early 70s, I certainly think the likes of Brabham, Lotus again. Late 70s is Ferrari, but you've got Lauda in the car there. A very large personality, I think it's fair to say. I don't know whether it's a bit more of an urban legend, but I'm sure you've both seen Rush.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where Lauda comes in from the first time he drives it and he says, "That's a shit box." You can't say that about a Ferrari. Yeah. Well, it is. You know. And then, like you say, you've got your barren spell through the 80s and the 90s until Schumacher, Todd era, and then they disappear again. This, we've long argued that this is normal Ferrari, and it is the Schumacher era was the outlier, not the other way around.
The funny thing is, when you go back to the 60s, and I'm not meaning this in a negative way about any of the teams. Ferrari were the big team. And then you say, we're talking about Lotuses, but there's also teams like Brabham pop up. Jack Brabham building his own cars and racing them and winning world championships. He's building a team himself and racing it and winning world championships against Ferrari and all of their resources. And then McLaren come in, and unfortunately Bruce McLaren doesn't get to win a championship in his own car, but they're very quickly becoming a powerhouse. Lotus come in, same thing. You get into the 70s and you end up with Matra and Tyrrell doing the same thing, McLaren coming to prominence. Everybody surpasses them almost immediately. And then that's the history of Ferrari. They just sit behind the front runners the entire time. In third, fourth best team. That's Ferrari's position, is third or fourth best team in Formula One. And it doesn't matter who's ahead of them. It's just going to cycle around constantly. And you will get the odd blip, like Kimi Räikkönen winning a world championship. But that was an exceptionally odd year. And I think now we can look at the Vettel years and go, maybe technically that Ferrari was probably faster overall than the Mercedes that Lewis is driving. But that Ferrari also came with the entire baggage and handicap of being a Ferrari, whereas Lewis didn't have to combat his race engineer because Bono knew what he was doing and the team in general knew what they were doing, the occasional blip. Mercedes' bad days back then were the same as Ferrari good days, just chaos.
Yes.
So I kind of look at the Vettel-Ferrari years and go, you know, that time he binned it at Hockenheim. It's probably because he's too busy thinking about the pit stop strategy that he should be on because his engineer's busy picking his nose.
I mean, there's something in that, because he crashed when it started raining and he was on slicks, and he's probably thinking, what do I do with tyres here? Whereas obviously Lewis probably had the benefit of, you know, Bono will tell me what tyres I need to be on, and that'll be it. I can focus on the driving. Whereas, yeah, Vettel's probably thinking, oh, do I need to come in now? Do I show another lap?
There's something to that as well, because there's something to be said between the relationship between a great driver and their engineer. Lewis and Bono, Max and GP. I know Max and GP argue a lot, but you can see the trust in that relationship. Mm-hmm. Even if they're arguing, they trust each other's opinion. And I've never seen that in Ferrari. And Williams is the other one, actually, that comes up on the radio constantly, that the drivers are arguing with the race engineers. But you never see it at Ferrari, but you do see it at Mercedes, minus when George is having his strop, but it's quite funny when George says that. It's a little bit...
And very British.
What was his comment at Mexico? It was like, do you want me to let the McLaren pass or something? He was like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
It was a good one. Ferrari don't seem to be able to have those relationships. And it feels like the team isn't set up to have positive relationships. It almost feels like it's set up in a combative way. Whereas the successful times of Max and GP and Vettel, and I can't remember what his race engineer at Red Bull was.
Rocky,
that was it. Like Vettel and Rocky was another one that got on really well, and Bono and Lewis. It's like they work together as a team and they never seem to question each other. It's just when one person says it, it's like, cool, Bono said that, that is fact. That's cool, that's what we're doing. And that takes Lewis's mind off it. Whereas at Ferrari, it appears that Lewis has to manage the entire pit wall, just the same way as Charles does, just the same way as Carlos did. And Carlos was getting quite good at it before he was sacked, which is quite funny. Maybe he was sacked because he was too good at it. Ferrari don't like confidence is the issue.
The thing about Vettel, the Vettel era that sticks in my mind with Ferrari is that Baku incident. And people defend Max using that incident. But for me, that Vettel driving into Lewis was generally out of character for what Vettel does. There was obviously some controversies about some of Vettel's behaviour in previous seasons, but he was never that kind of violent, aggressive driver in that sense. And then you look at Charles, who is a Ferrari driver through and through, and there's so many instances where he just looks purely broken. He came through with such a bright prospect. He was straight on to challenging Max. He looked brilliant. And you just see every year just progressively more and more broken. Lewis has come in and almost instantly broken. And it's such a pattern of what they do to drivers. And I've always believed that if Leclerc had come through at Mercedes or Red Bull or maybe Red Bull, he'd be a champion at some point. He's never going to achieve it with Ferrari, but there was something there when Charles came through that had the potential for it. And that's just, it's even worse than the car damage that Ferrari do. It's the driver damage and the morale. Then the general mental psyche of the drivers just gets absolutely destroyed because there's so much, like I say, ignorance from the driver's feedback, so much incompetence in what the drivers are trying to achieve on track that they can't, as you said, like Lewis with Bono, Vettel with Rocky, Max with GP, they can just put the trust in the pit wall and drive. They ask a question, they get it answered. You ask a question at Ferrari, you get we are checking, you've probably got five or six corners wondering what the answer is going to be before you know what you can carry on doing. It's so bizarre how obvious it is when you can actually sit and look at it. And like I say, a lot of us come through our formative years of like the Schumacher era was the first kind of big Ferrari impact. And so we kind of grew up thinking that's what Ferrari do. They are a dominant team. They're set up to win championships. And then again, you look back to the 60s and you'd realise there's so many gaps of just crap cars. Then the general, like you say, Dave, an upper midfield team at best. And it's crazy how they have such a reputation, such an aura, such a kind of, like Lewis went to them because he wanted to drive for a Ferrari. But then you think, actually, why? Like, yes, Ferrari, this amazing brand. But when you look at it from a sporting aspect, there is absolutely nothing there that puts them where they are.
I think it's funny as well that it's top to bottom. If you were to describe the problems with Ferrari, the most obvious ones that come up are the things like poor pit stop strategies and things like that, because that's a weekly thing. But the we are checking thing is really interesting because other than being a funny meme, it's also a great example of the difference between being proactive and reactive. When Lewis asked a question to Bono, an answer was given because Mercedes are prepping everything in advance. What is every single individuality here? What is all the different possible outcomes here? what is the driver going to ask about? Like, we know like all the different possible outcomes of everything, whereas Ferrari appear to just wing it every week. And that's how you end up with Charles being, oh, we're on plan G now. And you're like, cool, what the fuck is plan G at this point? Like, it's all gone to shit. And whenever a driver asks a question, it's almost like that the engineers haven't thought of it and went, oh, that is a good question. I'll go and check that out. And then they radio back, we are checking. And you're like, well, if the driver's asking about that, it must be relevant. And if it's relevant, why is the pit wall not noticed, given that they are literally sitting at a computer with all the data and haven't noticed something that a driver is doing or a driver is asking about whilst they're dealing with a Formula One car? They've still thought of something that the pit wall hasn't thought about. It's like, it is a really good example of proactive versus reactive, because I've never heard any other team say, yeah, we'll get back to you. That just doesn't happen. But in Ferrari, it's literally every single race. The driver surprises the pit wall and the pit wall go, oh, fuck me, that's a really good idea, that. And sometimes I feel like it'd be, give them like one of those Formula One management games for a week of training or something like that. You know, it's like, but that's a culture thing from top to bottom. That's not something that you can just sack Lewis as race engineer and it all becomes better. It's like, this is clearly a culture problem all the way up and down. And then you get back to situations like Brundle shouting, just stick a tire on it and send them out, because they weren't prepared properly, because that's Ferrari.
But then you have as well, like it happened at Brazil when Lewis's car was broken and he was still doing laps. And Lewis was like, I'm lucky not to crash here. And I think, Sim, you pointed out, they were actually waiting to see if Lewis was going to get a penalty so they could serve the penalty and then retire the car and not carry the penalty. Actually quite smart thinking. But nobody had the faith that that's what Ferrari were doing. Like, everyone just assumed that Ferrari just left Lewis out because that's their level. And it's almost like, yeah, like almost we think of these things, but we don't trust that Ferrari are actually doing it, even though they are a massive corporation F1 team.
But that's funny, because they've gotten something correct on the side. There's an odd situation has come up where Lewis's car is broken, but there might be a penalty, and they've went, oh, what if this? But we can't manage a normal race. Normal pit stops, we just can't deal with those. Like, even though we deal with them every race and every time we've got to make a pit stop and we know it's coming, but we can't deal with it. But then a weird situation comes up and they go, oh yeah, it'd be better to keep the car out. And you're like, yes, you were correct that time, but you're wrong every other time. So it kind of doesn't matter.
But when you look at the reason why Lewis got the penalty, driving into back of, was it the Alpine, was it the Gasly?
Yeah.
Carlo Pinto. Yeah, of course it was going slowly. Again, that seems very out of character for Lewis to like misjudge something or miscalculate something like that. So again, what was actually Lewis doing? Was he fighting with a car? Was he arguing with the team? Was he trying to plan a strategy? Was he trying to understand what he does from there rather than actually just focusing on the driving, because he can't put that faith into the team?
It's kind of a classic sign of stress, really, isn't it? You're getting things wrong because you're stressed. And why is he stressed? Well, one reason is he's driving a Formula One car at 200 mile an hour. The other reason is he appears to have to micromanage the pit wall. Although, if we've only got 15 minutes left, speaking of stress, we need to talk about the McLarens. Because the last time we recorded was pre-Mexico.
Yeah.
And then Lando decided that he was in a different formula from everybody else at Mexico and just drove off into the distance.
Yeah. Biggest winning gap of the year.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a good one. We can probably come back to the Mexico penalties another time when we get to talk about driving standards or lack of penalties or anything like that, because that was bizarre. And then you get to Brazil, and Oscar's entire championship appears to just unravel in 2 days. In both qualifying sessions, he wasn't quite there. He wasn't that far off, but he wasn't quite there. In the sprint, he puts it in the wall, and then in the Grand Prix, he causes an accident and gets a 10-second penalty, doesn't really manage to recover from it. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I disagree with the internet's narrative on this one, because the internet seems to have decided that Oscar's not at fault for that accident. And I can't see how he's not at fault for that accident, if I'm honest. Am I missing something?
No, I'm very pleased you said he caused the accident.
He did. He drove into the side of Kimi Antonelli. Is what happened.
It's kind of weird because I disagree with the steward's reasoning for the penalty.
Yes, I disagree with that.
I agree it should have been a penalty on him.
So. Yes. Well, so what was the steward's reasoning? Was that he was out of control?
Steward's reasoning was that he was out of control and his front axle wasn't alongside Kimi's mirrors. So therefore he wasn't entitled to space. But yeah, it's just, he was at fault for that because he was sticking his car in a place that it was a closing gap. It was always a closing gap. It's the analogy I like is, you know, at a zebra crossing in the UK, a pedestrian has right of way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're driving up in a car, the car should stop. The driver goes, the pedestrian crosses, driver goes after pedestrian. If you step out in front of a car who doesn't stop and get run over, it's all right. You're going, well, I had right of way, whilst you're sitting in the hospital with a broken neck and two broken legs. It's sometimes, you know what? Yeah, there's a gap there, but maybe I need to hang back from this because the other car potentially hasn't seen me. I'm quite far back. It's a safety car restart. He's got another car on the outside of him. This probably isn't the best situation for me to be sending it up. And then I'd sort of suggest that his biggest issue once he had sent it was that he tried to back out of it. I think if he had stayed in there, it might have had a better outcome for all three drivers. But as it was, he sent it and then half committed to it, tried to back out, and that's what caused the bigger issue for me.
The lockup was actually, it appeared to be the cause, but it was actually a symptom of the reaction rather than the cause. But it was the most highlightable thing to kind of put him down on.
And also, locking your inside front wheel coming into a corner, you're not out of control. That's just motorsport.
Yeah.
You know, you've just braked 1% too hard and locked the wheel. But the thing that does it for me is he was, of those three drivers, he was the only one that had a full view of the situation. Charles doesn't know what's going on in the inside. He knows Kimi's there, but he doesn't really know anything beyond that. Kimi can see Charles, obviously, and he can kind of see Oscar, but also not at the same time, because you can't look at two different things at the same time. So he's got to switch between them. Oscar is the only person that can look at that situation and be like, I can see both those cars. Both of them are going to turn into the corner. Maybe I shouldn't put my nose in there. And somebody else said that Kimi took the exact same aim as Lando in front of him. And that's not true. He's got about half a car's width on Lando. So he's actually half a car's width off where Kimi wants to be, which is giving Oscar a chance to get out of it. And Oscar still drives into the side of him. There's also an argument to be made that Oscar was going to miss the apex. So even if Kimi had left a car's room, Oscar was going to sail out wide into the apex, out beyond the apex into the two cars anyway. Mm. Kimi can't really move right because Charles is there and the circuit gets narrower there as you go downhill. It's got an odd kind of sweep out to the right and then it narrows down. Both in terms of circuit width and in terms of usable racing line there. That was always going to narrow to at least two cars. And Oscar decided at the last minute, I'll just chuck it down there. I can't see how that's anything but Oscar's fault. And also, he shouldn't have been in that position in the first place because his teammate was on pole by several tenths of a second, whereas when he qualified, I think it was fourth or something like that, he was something like less than one-tenth from being eighth. So if he hadn't messed up qualifying, he wouldn't have been in that position. And then he made the wrong judgment call in the race anyway, and it cost him even more points. So like, it just appears to be a complete unraveling from top to bottom of Oscar's entire weekend. And it started in sprint qualifying right at the start because he made a mess of that, crashed in the race. And you could say it's like, well, that was, you know, three cars crashed there, fine. But his teammate didn't. And Max had the biggest moment of everybody and still held it. So it just appears to be Oscar's weekend unraveled. I don't see how that's anybody else's fault but his own.
Is it a weekend or is it a season?
Yeah. Half season, yeah.
As I was finishing that, somebody is going to accuse me of being a rampant Lando fan. But if we rewind to the start of the year, I said Oscar would win the championship. And I quite like being right. And I'm definitely not going to be right.
I think I stuck with Lando and you all snirked at me.
Yeah, looking back, it's like you were definitely wrong, and now you're definitely right.
This is a monumental drop-off, though, isn't it? Have you seen that particular burger chain in Australia at all? I think it's called Grilled.
Yeah, I've seen this.
They have an Oscar Piastri burger, and I believe after the summer break they started a promotion, which is if Oscar finishes on the podium and you buy a Piastri burger, you get one free. They've had to change that promotion because he hasn't actually finished on the podium since they started it. So now it's if Oscar starts a Grand Prix and you buy a burger, you get one free.
If he starts a Grand Prix,
he's gone six races without even finishing on the podium in a car that won the Constructors' Championship three races ago. It's monumental Weber-esque drop off, I'd suggest.
The funny thing is, when you try and trace it back and find what was the tipping point, it's actually really blurry. Because for the start of the year, definitely like Australia, I'm looking at the results now, by the way, this is how I'm able to rattle this off. So Lando wins Australia, but there was that oddity with the rain. Fine. Okay, different. Yeah. And then you get Piastri, Verstappen, Piastri, right down to Miami. And it's pretty clear from this set, Oscar's got the legs on him. And then Imola happens, Max wins. Monaco. Lando ran away with Monaco in a kind of legendary fashion of, you know, qualifying on pole. Was it not something like the first lap time ever under 70 seconds or something like that? Led every lap, dominated Monaco. And you go, well, that's interesting. That's an outlier. And at the time, it was certainly an outlier. Oscar wins in Spain. George wins in Canada. And then it becomes the Lando show.
Don't forget, in Canada, Lando crashed into the back of the Austria.
He did, you're right.
Piastri for a DNF.
He did. But Lando's reaction there was different to what it used to be. Because Lando was usually, let's be honest, a bit of a depressy boy. He was very sad at all times. And as soon as he had that accident, he was like, ah, crap, my bad. And he tried to make light of it and also immediately just went, my bad. But he didn't kind of go into a sulk. So, like, that's different. And that comes straight after Monaco. Spain's in between. So, like, oh, so did something change around Monaco? And then after Canada, you get Austria, Lando. British Grand Prix, Lando. Oscar kind of shat the bed a little bit with the safety car stuff, but okay, fine. Belgium, Oscar wins. Hungary, Lando wins. Dutch Grand Prix was interesting because they were neck and neck and Lando had an engine failure. And then after that, Oscar's nowhere to be seen again because you get a couple of Max wins, George and Max, but Lando's right up there with them when they're winning, whereas Oscar's nowhere. Is it really a sudden change for Lando, or did this actually start in Monaco? Did Lando get on top of his head at Monaco, and Lando being on top of his game has slowly eroded Oscar away? Is that what's actually happened? Oscar's drop-off is more sudden than Lando's turnaround, I think.
I would agree with that, if I'm honest. I suspect that, like you say, I think he turned it around in Monaco, but then you've got the Canada incident, and then the Zandvoort engine failure have probably clouded the judgment of Lando's season a bit and made it look slightly worse than it was. But I think you're right. Since Monaco, Lando's been there or thereabouts because, okay, Piastri probably should have won Silverstone if it wasn't for his safety car shenanigans, but Lando still had to be close enough to make that penalty, you know, punishable from Oscar, effectively.
And then if we look at the issues that Lando has had, apart from the engine failure, which is out of his influence, Canada was a stupid mistake. Driver error, fine. But then we look at COTA, for example. Oscar's driver error took out another car. And then Sao Paulo, Oscar's driver error takes out another car. Not his teammate this time, but he still does it. And he crashes himself. Oscar's made more mistakes that have been race-ending or had significant race impacts than Lando has this year.
I don't know if you listen to the Beyond the Grid podcast with it's the official F1 podcast at all. But Piastri was on it this week. And he said on that the request to switch to positions at Monza affected him mentally in a negative fashion.
Get a fucking grip.
and my response to that is, if that's what causes downturn in form, being asked to, what was it, swap from third to fourth, losing 3 points overall, something like that, you don't deserve to be Formula One world champion if that's what's impacting you.
That's interesting because that does track with the timelines because he won in the Netherlands. Granted, Lando was with him, but he was leading. So, okay, we're going to give Oscar that win regardless of Lando's engine failure. And then Italy, it all goes downhill after that, because after the Italian Grand Prix, it's Azerbaijan, which was a dreadful weekend for McLaren, but an even worse weekend for Oscar on his own. And then Mexico was poor, COTA was poor, Sao Paulo was poor. It does actually track with what he's saying. But then that's really funny because the narrative that has been built around the McLaren drivers is that Lando is very sensitive and very self-conscious. And that's not a criticism of it, of him at all, because, you know, that's just people. That's the narrative that's been built up. And with Oscar, nothing phases him. And what we're seeing now is everybody's booing Lando, and he's just like, yeah, whatever, who cares? And Oscar's getting upset because he was asked to change position once. He's like, we've built these narratives the wrong way around, and it appears to be that Oscar's actually the really sensitive one who's easy to upset. It's just it's not as obvious in his mannerisms, whereas Lando's it is. It's just really interesting how it appears that everybody, including us, but everybody got their personalities the wrong way around, I think.
Mm. I was just going to say, it is mad. Like you say, it's not even like just a slow pace. It's the fact that he's crashed in, well, Azerbaijan, USA, Brazil. Like that's, you know, it's actual crashes. It's not just like, say, being a bit rubbish, being a bit slow. It's completely lost.
That's, what was it Scott said as well last time he was on, that Oscar's never taken a corner off a car?
What's really funny is the timing of that as well, because Sao Paulo, you can put that down to now he's under pressure. He has to beat Lando, so he has to risk these moves. But until Sao Paulo, he was still leading the world championship. He didn't actually have to make these moves. He just needed to beat Lando.
Mm.
So Azerbaijan, well, all came off the rails. Okay, one bad weekend. But then Singapore, Kota, Mexico, he was still leading the championship in those events. He didn't need to do anything daft, but Kota was daft. Like, you know, he just wasn't thinking and cut over the front of another car and then never recovered throughout the whole weekend. So it's kind of almost been, he didn't actually have any pressure on him because he just needed to be kind of second to Lando for the whole year. But he hasn't even managed to achieve that. And now the championship is with, I'm not going to say gone, because as we've just learned with this year, you never actually know. He could turn up in Las Vegas and blitz it. Who knows? But it appears to be, at this moment, gone.
Never mind the championship. He might even end up third.
So I was just going to say, to close out then, Dave, what do you think the order of the top three in the championship is going to be after Abu Dhabi?
Oh, Lando, Max, Oscar. Just looking at the points now.
Same question to you.
I almost want it to be Lando, Max, Oscar. I think Max almost deserves it.
Do we have any sprints left?
Yes, one at Qatar.
Oh, God.
So we've got three Grand Prix plus a sprint.
Why does it have to be a Qatar? Right, okay, fine. No, you like Qatar, don't you? Because
Qatar kind of works, yeah.
No, it doesn't. It's another week off. Yeah, well, that's three races to go. There is 25 points between them, so one race win. And Max has not, I'm just looking at the results now, Max has not lost to Oscar since the Netherlands.
Bloody hell.
So Monza, Max won. Azerbaijan, bad weekend for McLaren. Singapore, Max was second. USA, Max won. Mexico and Sao Paulo, Max was on the podium, despite starting in the pit lane, which is a topic for another time. Max's best drives, you know, finishing third, turns out, one of them.
I think we're unanimous then. It's going to be Lando, Max, Oscar.
So do we think there's any title threat from Max?
Nah. It's 50 points.
Not now. What is it? He's 49 points behind. He could be out of it after Las Vegas, I think.
Yeah. It was a bit of a scary time, but I think we're all right.
I mean, at this point, I think Lando can actually afford a DNF and a 0 points.
Yeah.
And even if Oscar wins a race, which I don't think he will on current form, Oscar would only have a 1 point lead. And I don't think that's enough over Lando in his current form. Lando is pretty unstoppable at the moment. The sensitive boy is no longer fazed by anything.
No one's fazed by everything.
Yeah, take out that engine failure and he would be clinching the title in Las Vegas if it wasn't for
He'd have another 7 points over Oscar, wouldn't he? And whatever over Max as well.
So, well, another,
yeah, he will be clinching it in.
Another 18 over Oscar, because he would have finished second at Netherlands.
Sorry, yeah.
So like he would wrap this up with two races to go had he not had an engine failure at Netherlands. I know we're talking like Lando's definitely won the championship and this year's might not, but you get my point.
I do hope Lando wins, because then it would mean a British driver's won or could potentially win every world championship in the FIA this season.
Oh, right. Okay, that's a game. Who won WEC? Ferrari? Was Sam Bird one of them?
No. Nope. James Calado.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay, Formula E?
Yeah, was Oliver Rowland, I think it was.
Okay. What other FIA World Championships are there nowadays?
So then you've got Formula One.
Yep.
And Lando is currently in pole position. And then you've got WRC, where Elfyn Evans leads currently with one round to go.
Does World Rally Cross count anymore? Does that count as a...
Does it even exist?
So
I thought they'd changed it to just European.
Yeah, it is going away, but I think it did exist at the start this year. I can't remember. It existed for a while. It got a new promoter and existed for a while, but it is disappearing next year.
The four main ones, then, if you're going to go down that route.
Yeah,
well, that's generous given Formula E, but yeah.
There's a discussion to be had on WEC, given world championships now have balance of performance, which they absolutely should not have. That's a discussion for another day. So we've got Las Vegas this weekend. What's the predictions for this one?
I'm thinking Red Bull, you know. I reckon Max could win.
When you said Red Bull, I was Mercedes. Thinking, are you thinking Yuki's got
Yeah, just had to clarify that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Mercedes have been strong here the last 2 years, so I'm going to go with... you know what? I've had quite a few rums. Kimi Antonelli's first win.
Oh, that's a prediction.
Is it another overnight race?
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, isn't it, UK time?
No, I mean, in Las Vegas, because wasn't it like minus temperatures or something last year or something?
According to the weather forecast, it is going to be snowing during qualifying.
Because do we still have the narrative that Mercedes works best in cold weather?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Kimi's not a bad shout then.
I like that Las Vegas has gotten everything wrong, by the way.
Yeah.
The time works for nobody. It's not great for Las Vegas. It's not great for the East Coast of America. It's terrible for Europe. So everybody's unhappy together. So that's great. And we're racing at night and somehow you can't see the strip. We're racing down it, but we can't actually see it. So like I expected like incredible bright lights, almost like a Need for Speed game. And you know, it'd be great. But no, just looks like Singapore.
Is anybody getting up for qualifying?
No.
What time's qualifying?
4 a.m.
It'd be 3 a.m.
I mean, it says 4 on the app.
Oh, does it?
Oh, we're doing a live thing here. Am I getting racing line stuff wrong?
Wait a minute. You might be right. It's just usually that the qualifying's an hour before the race.
Yeah, it is usually. It definitely says 4 on the app.
It is 4 a.m. Yeah, according to the F1 site as well. So 4 a.m.
No.
I might. Because I get up at like 5:30 anyway, so it's not.
Yeah, I get up at 4:45 normally. Yeah.
Yeah, so I might as well. I think I'll set the alarm for 4. The start of Q1 isn't that important, so I'll get up at 4, meander downstairs to watch one of the Ferraris getting knocked out, and then.
I'll get up for the race, but I'm not really kind of considering it for qualifying. I don't think.
Same.
So the other prediction is which McLaren finishes ahead of the other. Does Lando extend his gap or does Oscar finally bring some back?
Let's go. Kimi, Max, George, Lando, Charles, Oscar.
Christ. That'll be getting really close to Lando wrapping it up in Qatar then with those numbers. Wow. I'm going for a Lando win. I think he's just on it at the moment.
I'm going to go Kimi, Lando, and Lewis gets his first Ferrari podium.
Fucking hell, you're on the wrongs.
Some wild shit going on tonight. You really have had a lot to drink.